the city manager of Beloit, who's going to crack down on all this illegal parking, illegal rolling of stop signs. Wait a minute. He's not law enforcement.
Yeah.
No. He's not. He's not that. He could just maybe recommend, hey, let's go.
Some of that's just got to be people. You know what I mean? Like,
there'd be
just
a lot of tickets given out.
It's really a manifestation of you learn a lot about folks, you know. So
yeah,
it's like, yeah. Just like anything. It's just
well, we talked about it before, you know, if there's rules but they're not enforced. Like, for instance, sure. If there was no troopers on the highway, people would be driving 90 to 100 miles an hour. I could guarantee it. But there's the threat of a trooper.
Sure.
So I might get a ticket. And that's a good thing because that keeps things a little bit safer. But it doesn't apply across the board to various things as we've seen here recently. So it is interesting how everybody
you always have the other side of it too. You know, if you get everybody for every little infraction with that, you're not gonna have a police force much longer.
No, right. It'll be like they're picking on us, they're a pain in the rear. It's so, like, well, here, you know, here's the idea. Don't violate the law.
Society's full of those types of balances, you know, and it's kind of sometimes it sways one way or the other. And it's a fickle little thing.
I'm not being critical of law enforcement. I'm just joking that if they want to get a whole bunch of money.
Yeah, I used to have a friend on Facebook that used to just, I was like, this fun thing to do is take pictures of funny parking or whatever else. Yeah. And there's some pretty hilarious things that happen.
It really makes sense
in those folks' mind, but you're just like, what are you doing?
By the way, it's not just here. It's all over. I mean, you go to the big city, you see it. You see it in small towns. You see it in rural areas and everything
else. It's a good challenge to do your best.
Yes, it absolutely is. Although, I may start just keeping track with a tally board how many violations. I saw a lady with 7 violations in about 5 minutes yesterday. can't imagine what everybody else is doing, too. And I'm sure I have violations as well, so I'm not a perfect driver, and don't think anybody is. But
I'm going to start being careful now.
Yeah, you better watch it. I know what you drive. I'll see it. The city manager of Beloit just rolled a stop sign. That's it. I got to call and complain.
It's really funny because you say that, and that's what I. Yeah, I try to be really careful when I drive, and I'm sure I still screw up. But I'm always like, you know, it's like, oh, I know people are going to be like, oh, there's the city manager. Didn't stop correctly, so I had to be really I catch myself all the time, make sure I go the speed limit.
I've seen law enforcement in police vehicles, whether it be here and other places, that they're rolling. I've seen them roll signs and not use blinkers, so we all do it. We all do it. I'm just saying, if you really want to have fun and pull everybody over, there's your way right there, because there's lots of violations out there. It's because it's interesting, because my son just had to pass his test, and I'm like, that's what got me on this kick of talking about it, was how many adults would actually pass the written test today, no matter what their age is or their gender? Would they pass the written test to get to the driver's test? And if they got to the driver's test, would they pass the driver's test? And I am guessing that probably 50% of adults, maybe I'm a little bit off here, I think half of the adults out there, including myself, just anybody in general, would not pass both.
Sure. Well, it's kind of like, I remember when I was going through that age, you know, it's kind of like, well, here's what you do to pass the test.
Right.
You know what I mean? Then you just sit there and watch your parents drive, and you're like, wait a minute, you know, but they're like, well, when you drive, you really should do this, but in practice, you know, it's easier just to do X, Y, Z,
It's funny you bring that up, because I failed my first test, and you know why? It was Watkins, Kansas, where I grew up, and I went into the DMV, and I got in and I'm nervous. I'm 14, 15, whatever, for the farmer's permit, and I drove in the country all the time, but Mom and Dad really didn't take me in town, really practice driving in town, although I knew the rules for the most part. And so I get in with the instructor in the vehicle that we provided, and there's a stop sign just literally leaving the parking lot from the DMV station. And so we leave when we proceed, and I 10-15 minute drive, and I'm kind of I'm a little uptight and nervous and whatever else, and the instructor didn't say hardly anything, which made you even more nervous. And so we get back to the station, and the instructor says, well, you did a really good job, except you failed 10 seconds out the gate. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You rolled a stop sign when we left the parking lot. I'm like, what? I said, I stopped. They go, no, you rolled. I'm like, well, my mom and dad do that all the time. And they're like, yeah. All of a sudden, there was this sympathy like, your adults are lawbreakers. And all this, and I realize, you mean you got to actually come to a complete stop, look both ways, and wait 3 to 4 or 5 seconds? And so I had failed. That instructor could have saved me the time, but it was like a practice run.
Sure.
But I'd failed within 15 seconds. Yep.
Probably a lot of people did that same test. Probably, that's why she had them start there.
Yeah, probably so. Let's see if this person follows what mom and dad does. But you're right. You know, you follow your mentors, your mom, your dad, you see what they do. And just like if you're a person that you know, says don't say bad words, and then you say bad words, that's not really, you know, sending the right message. So anyway, we'll get off of all that. But those are, did you pass your first driver's test?
Yes. Barely.
It was
one of those things where, and the one thing that she nailed me on, and I didn't even think about, I had my parents' big Suburban, you know, back in the late 90s, and so I was driving, everything was going good, and we got there, and she's like, okay, you passed, but here's, you know, you barely did, you didn't turn square enough. I was like, well, okay, well, I'm, you know, driving like an 18-wheeler, but I'll do my best. Right. And then all the windows had fogged up, because it was in Minnesota, it was like in the fall, late fall, and so everything, and, you know, the defrost was terrible, and so... And I was just like, you know, and she was like, you have to make sure your passengers are comfortable and this and that. You know, she's like knocking me on this thing and stuff. And I was like, just give me the t-. Yeah, I was just like,
did I pass or not?
Yeah, exactly.
Just get to the point.
She just had to do her little thing. So I'll never forget that. So I'm always like, okay, make sure the windows are defrosted, you know.
Yeah.
But, so it stuck with me. But
isn't that weird how we remember those things from years ago or memories get triggered?
Yeah.
Jason Raby, the city manager of Beloit, is with us talking about our great times that we passed or failed our driver's test way back in the day. Okay, so... you know, this is a big thing, of course, now we're seeing across the country in regards to, hey, yeah, get out and vote, so forth and so on. There are some changes within the city of Beloit.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the city government's kind of been on a little bit of a journey here the last 4 or 5 years. And I think it's, you know, the council and some of the folks that have brought this forth have good intentions. And I think there's been some good results with it. And for a long time, you know, the city had, you know, 8 council members and 4 wards. And I think, you know, maybe decades ago, that was a good fit for the community. And about 4 years ago, they went to 6 council members and 2 wards. So really, you know, with trying to recruit or trying to get people to run for any office or any position anymore is a challenge. I mean, we see it at the school board level. We see it. And so this is a challenge to anybody, you know, run for office. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a good thing to do. But really, you know, that's really what we're reacting to is making sure that we're not chasing after folks or having to ask people to be on council, and having been a part of that here the last couple of elections and trying to encourage folks to run, it can be a real challenge. And I think that as many decisions as we make that affect the community, it's not something we want to necessarily leave to chance.
You know? Right.
And so, you know, I think that that's an important thing. So kind of what the council's worked on here in the last election or two that we found to be a real challenge. And I know we talk about that all the time with elections, that we want them to be, you know, to be fair and easy for people to access. But also I think it's important for people to easily understand the issues or what they're voting for.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the way that our system was when we went to the 2 wards even was still really confusing for people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in our society, we're pretty fast paced. We can get a lot of information quickly. But sometimes we also, you know, if we haven't lived here for a long time or known how things have gone, and obviously changing from 4 to 2, people didn't quite know where those boundaries were, even though we put them out there and posted them and helped them understand. But, you know, who was from where and who was running on which side and which side can I vote on, and especially when you didn't have people actually put their name on the ballot. So maybe it's more of an at-large campaign, which is totally fine. You know, not at-large, excuse me.
Write-in.
A write-in campaign, which is totally fine. But again, trying to educate people, not only that, hey, I'm a write-in candidate, write me in, but if I'm in this ward and only people in this side of town can vote for me, that got to be really confusing.
Sure.
So, and of course, a lot of people reach out to me, you know, to ask me, hey, who's this? And what's, you know, trying to understand it. And it was really, I think I even had a few Facebook posts out there about it, you know, just saying, hey, trying to clarify the situation. Because the last election, we had a couple people actually get signatures and get on the ballot, and then the other one was wide open, which is, again, fine, but trying to explain that and the size, it just, I don't think it does our community any benefit in that regard. So, especially the way that I think the council saw, the way that you can communicate anymore and get a hold of everybody, and our council members, especially now, and I think anyone elected would really be, hey, we represent the whole community, you know, and we have people from all over town. So basically I say all that to the ballot's going to show an election question now that says, hey, you know, the city of Beloit is, you know, it's a yes or no, you know, wanting to go to no wards. So it'd be an at-large election. So each election cycle, there'd either be 3 seats open or 2 seats open, because basically they're also, the other move is to go to 5 council members, so from 6 to 5. Just eliminates, as you know, fewer ties. Not that we have any or many, but right. It also, again, just takes it down to
tie, right?
Yeah, it just takes it down to probably a number that is really common for towns our size, mm-hmm. and again, you know, just really getting that quality over quantity issue. So anyway, that's more of a minor change. But so, you know, one election will be 2 seats, and the top 2 vote getters in the whole town get those seats.
Yeah.
And the next section is 3, you know, and the top 3 vote getters get it. Mm-hmm. So whether it's the incumbent or somebody running against them, it doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. They get the top votes, they get the seats. So really common, especially for, like I said, for communities bigger than us and smaller than us, to utilize that system. I think it really makes it, I think the council's thinking, hey, this will make it simple. Mm-hmm. It'll make it easy for people to understand who to vote for, because it's basically anybody. You know what I mean? You see them on the ballot for the council position, it's the top 2 get it. And so that's really what that election question's talking about. Again, it's to eliminate the wards and to take the council from 6 members to 5 members. And I think if the voters choose to enact that, I think that's going to be a really good positive and mm-hmm. really help simplify our election process and hopefully simplify for people that want to run, you know, because you might have, you know, that's just it. You get people stuck in different wards.
Yeah, what ward am I running in? What ward would I be? Who would I be going against? That's confusing to me.
It is, yep. And so now you're a voter that, unfortunately, mm-hmm. That's just anybody.
You know how many times
November 4th, we're like, oh, shoot, I got to vote this afternoon. Who should I vote for? And then you don't, you know. And and so this, I think, is just going to be a good thing if the voters choose this. And if people have questions, feel free to reach out to me, and I can at least help explain it. I'm not going to tell you how to vote or whatever. And obviously, I'm going to have a view that, you know, maybe one side's easier than the other.
Right.
But the voters really need to educate themselves. And so I can kind of show them again, probably in better terms in person, of, you know, what kind of how we're doing it now and what's the proposal. Hopefully then they can make that good decision.
I've heard that before, like who represents your ward. I'm like, well, I know of these names, but I'm not exactly sure who's what ward.
And frankly, I get a few people that ask me that just because I think they've lived here for a long time, they'll say, you know, if they have an issue or whatever. But more and more, I mean, I'd had to venture a guess, but definitely a majority of the inquiries or the concern emails, or, you know, against a certain issue, they're just hey, who's all the council members? And they're just sending it to all of them.
Sure.
You know what
I
mean? So it's really gone away from, you know, who's in my ward. And I think it's, again, because just like our world is so interconnected through social media and cell phones and all sorts of things. So is our, even our small town is people are, you know, it's pretty fluid.
Absolutely. I agree with you. Jason Raby, the city manager of Bolita, our guest today on Community Matters, brought to you by Mitchell County Hospital Health Systems. All right. Solar. We've talked about this before, but you got a little bit more about the solar project?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is something that's kind of a long road here, but really what we're wrestling with as a council and as an electric utility. So, again, you know, it's basically the city of Beloit, or, you know, really the citizens of Beloit. We own our electric utility and electric distribution system in town. And part of the strategy is determining how we're going to provide power and where we're going to get those power resources, you know, this year, but also 5 years from now, 20 years from now. And so it's kind of a long-term deal. So for example, one of the big power pieces that we've had, that's kind of one of our base pieces of power, we've had for nearly 20 years. So it's a contract. We buy power from a Great River Dam Authority down in, I believe, in Oklahoma. And over time, that's been a good deal. Sometimes it's not. In the last probably 10 years, it's not been the best deal for us. I mean, it's been okay, but it's, you know, we're kind of stuck with it. It's not the worst thing. It's kind of like having your money in a bond, you know, or a CD, you know, not a bad thing. It's just the really
safe,
low interest.
Decent,
safe,
could be better, yeah, could be worse, and type of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. So anyways, that thing expires in 26, and it's one of those deals that the marketplace has changed a lot to where you can, you know, since that came to fruition, you know, in the last 10 years, that you can buy day ahead power. I mean, it's like you can buy power at any rate, you know, at the rate, whatever it is tomorrow, and fill a lot of your power needs. And especially lately, it's been, or in the last few years, it's been really affordable. And so what we're really looking at with solar, it's not going to be the answer for everything. And I don't want people to get the wrong impression that we're trying to make all of our power resources green. In fact, you know, I've always kind of thought, damn, you know, water was hydro was kind of a green power. You may be against dams and damming out rivers, but it is kind of a renewable source because it's just going through the dam and making electricity. A lot of our power resources are that already. Mm-hmm. But really what our goal with it is to utilize kind of some smart renewable energy, and that's kind of where I see solar slotting in. And at some point, our power needs might be met, at the onset of this initial project, it might satisfy, 10% of our power needs. Mm-hmm. And if we go to a phase two, like by 25 or 26, when that Great River Dam Authority goes off, that might satisfy about 20% of our power needs. And really that makes sense when you think of kind of our power curve. So, we kind of have a base level power, which that Great River Dam Authority power contract was filling. So, 10 o'clock at night, when it's wintertime, we might use half of our peak load. And then when it's summertime, like this today, afternoon at 3 o'clock, higher. Remember it's July and August, so everybody's air conditioners are running and things are going crazy. We're going to use a big chunk of power above that. So a lot of times we don't necessarily have that contracted. We just go buy it on the marketplace, mm-hmm. or we go, another resource. And so solar is really going to help slot and fill kind of that peak, that day when it's expensive to go purchase power, or more expensive. It's mm-hmm. with the marketplace, it's still pretty affordable, but that's really going to help us fill that void. And by doing a phase two eventually, that may even have battery technology in it to help store some of that power, because what you're going to see is the peak power time is going to shift probably from 2 to 3 o'clock, mm-hmm. when people are, you have to buy power from some peak generation plant,
right,
to maybe 5-6 o'clock in the afternoon in July or August, because everybody's going to have mm-hmm. solar, so mm-hmm. it's going to push that peak, so everybody's mm-hmm. going to need it when the solar isn't on,
right?
You know what I mean? So it's really interesting here the next 5 or 10 years, and so that'll actually make our power plant, this thing was built over the last 50, 60, 70 years, and it's going to make it really needed mm-hmm. in 2025 again, but only for a few hours every year, a few hours a month,
right,
during those peak times. So I say all that to say that, this solar project is going to be out on some of that by the sewer plant. And that's really what we're shooting for, is it's going to be about a 2 megawatt solar project that the electric utility is purchasing and will utilize within that realm. You know what I mean? So it's paid for by electric revenues, and we have it projected out that, the first few years it'll be about the same as what we're getting everywhere else, but it's really going to set us up for 5, 10, 15 years down the road. Mm-hmm. That's where that thing is really going to pay off. And so, it's kind of I think it's going to be a really neat project from the standpoint of, you hear of other communities in our area that have made some really, strategic power moves, maybe 20 years ago or 30 years ago, hey, we're going to go all in on this, and we're not necessarily going all in, but we're making a pretty bold move here that I think is going to really pay dividends for us, right away, but 5, 10, 15, right, 20 years down the road. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else to add before we let you go today?
No, like I said, just, contact me. If you have questions about either one of those issues, just reach out and I'll talk you up.
Talk you up.
Way more than we can talk about here on the radio.
And ask how you did on your first driving test.
There you go.
That'll break the ice. You bet. Jason Raby, City Manager Beloit. Jason, as always, thanks for your time. We'll see you again the last Wednesday in September, man.
All righty. Thank you.
Community Matters brought to you by Mitchell County Hospital Health Systems.